What I'd like to briefly do this evening session is give a little general introduction into meditation, and particular a little bit more information, introduction into the shamatha practice, the concentration practice, because we're going to start meditation sessions first thing in the morning, and we're going to be going into, particularly in the morning sessions, the shamatha practice. So I think it's good to have a little bit of background information about meditation in general and the shamatha practice before we begin that tomorrow morning. So when we talk about meditation practice or meditation, we can talk about two aspects or two parts to meditation: preparation and actual meditation. Because often when people sit down to meditate, they jump, sit down quickly, and then they just start doing whatever the meditation is that they're supposed to be doing. And then often they have a lot of difficulties with their body, mind is not behaving very well, and it doesn't go very well. And often it's because we haven't prepared ourselves very well at the beginning of the meditation. So half the battle of engaging in good meditation is to prepare ourselves well for the actual meditation, whatever we're meditating on. So I'd like to go through some aspects of preparation that, if we do them correctly, then we can be in a very good state, or the best possible state, to actually do the meditation. So in preparation, we can talk about preparing body, speech, mind. And so, of course, in terms of preparing body, we're talking about setting up a good posture. So we want to set up a posture such that our body is not really creating any problems in our meditation, or at least minimize that. Because we want to be able to be in a posture whereby we can forget about our body and just focus on the meditation. So I'd like to go through some aspects of the posture, and probably many of you have heard this many times, but it's always good to remind ourselves of good aspects of posture, to what is a good posture. And often in the Tibetan tradition, when they talk about posture, they go through these seven-point Virachana posture. And I'll just pick out a couple of the very important points in that. And in general, we can say there are two or three points very important with the posture. The first is to keep the back nice and straight. Because if we don't have the back straight and we're sort of hunched over like this, then we're probably going to get very drowsy or sleepy. And often also at a more subtle level, if we don't keep the back straight, then at a subtle level, the subtle energies in our body don't flow very well. They get blocked, and that causes a bit of a negative impact on the mind. With the back straight, subtle energies in the body flow better. And then also we're not going to probably fall into the drowsiness as well. So back straight, important. And the other second most important thing with the posture is to be completely relaxed, to have the body completely relaxed. And then the third point actually is to keep the body as still as possible. Because often, even though we have a good posture, maybe we've got a good posture in the meditation, then suddenly there's a little bit of an itch in the face, and so we do this, and then a bit itch here, and then something's not right, so we're sort of moving around like this. And every time we do this, of course, we're disturbing the meditation. So we're not going to go very deep into the meditation if we're constantly scratching, itching, and moving the body. So once we find a good posture, then to really allow the body to be as still as possible. Having said that, of course, if we're sitting there very still and then after 15 or 20 minutes we get a strong pain in the knee that is drawing all our attention there, then there's not much point in staying with that pain because we're completely caught up in it. So if there is some strong pain, then maybe we need to adjust the posture. But of course, the more we prepare the body as well outside of meditation in terms of doing yoga and stretching and so forth, the more you'll find that these sort of aches and pains
will subside, because often they come because we're not used to sitting in a certain way, and that's stretching some muscle or something, putting a lot of tension in that area. So it's also very much recommended to help with the posture is to do some physical body work to make the body more flexible. Now, within the posture, a couple of points that are important. First, there's a lot of talk about what to do with the legs. And often you'll see in the meditation text that the ideal posture with the legs is the full lotus, having both feet on the opposite thighs. Now, most of us, of course, are not flexible enough to do that. But if you can, of course, that's very stable. It's a very stable posture. If you can't do that, then the next variation they often talk about is called the half lotus, where you have one foot on one thigh and the other one underneath. So that's sort of like the half lotus. But many of us probably can't do that, not enough flexibility to do that. So then they talk often about just simply having the legs, you know, cross-legged posture. Now, with the cross-legged posture, often many of us are not used to sitting cross-legged, so we're very stiff in the groins and the knees. So when we sit cross-legged, often we end up sitting like this in meditation. This is not so optimal because one is it's not very stable. We're probably going to move around a lot. And secondly, having them like that is a sign that we're not very flexible in the groins and the knees. And then we're probably putting a lot of strain on the lower back. And probably then if we sit for that, after some time we get some lower back pain. So that's not very conducive. And then often when we're sitting like this, we're constantly straightening the back because we're sinking down because of the stiffness here. So if you find that your knees are sticking up like this, then it's a sure sign you're not very flexible. So, of course, outside of meditation, we can do some yoga, stretching to help that. But then within the meditation, then just sit on more cushions. So just more cushions so that the knees are at least level with the hips and ideally having the knees touching. So then you have three points of contact and that's very stable. If they're not quite touching, then sometimes you can put a little cushion under each knee here to support and make a bit more stable. So have enough cushion, and if you have enough cushions here so that the knees are down or at least level, then also you'll find your back will become much more naturally straight. You won't have to be straining it to keep it straight. So then more cushions, the back will be more straight naturally, the knees down, more comfortable. Sometimes people with cross-legged posture find that they cut the circulation. One or both legs go numb. So if that happens, what can often help is just keep adjusting slightly how you sit cross-legged and maybe the other way cross-legged. And you may find a certain way of sitting cross-legged, you won't have that problem. But if you still continue to have that problem and it's really bothering you, then a variation of the cross-legged posture is to do what's called the Burmese posture, where you have not your legs crossed, but you have one in front of the other. And then you don't have the problem of cutting circulation. So this is sometimes called the Burmese posture. So this is also a very good posture to sit in. Now, some people, of course, have knee problems, damaged knees, ligament problems. Sitting cross-legged is just painful in any way. Then, of course, an option, a variation, is to use a meditation stool. I don't think anyone's got one here. But basically on a stool where you tuck your legs underneath. So meditation stools can be very good for people who have knee problems, sitting on the meditation stool, legs tucked underneath. Some people find that also quite painful. Maybe they have some sort of back problems. Then sitting in a chair is completely acceptable. If you're going to use a chair, then probably most chairs are not really designed for seating meditation because of the shape of the back and you end up sort of slouching in the chair. So then often with a normal chair, you'll probably need to put some sort of cushioning in your back to keep the back straight so you're not slouching into the chair. And also the base of the chair, depending on the angle, you may need to put a cushion to adjust the angle of the base. So you may need in a normal chair to do a bit of adjusting to get flat bottom and then keep the back straight. And then the feet flat on the ground, of course. Now, some people have back problems and find that even sitting in a chair is painful. Then another valid option, of course, is to lie down, using what's called the Shavasana, the corpse posture in meditation. That's lying flat on your back with your feet a little bit apart, hands to the side, a bit away from the body, palms facing upwards. Of course, there the back is very straight, the body is completely relaxed. So this is a very good posture for meditation. And also, it's not only good for people who have back problems, but also sometimes when we meditate, we may be very fatigued one day. So physically, it's very hard to sit upright because we're quite physically fatigued. Then we can lie down, or we may find we're a bit ill or have some illness or physical problem with the body a certain time, then we can lie down. So this is an option to use in those situations. And also, and that's what we're going to do in this retreat, we're going to use this posture at the end of every day, because it's also a very good way to end the day. At home, before you go to bed, or actually when you go into bed, then first thing you do is you lie down in your bed on your back, flat on your back in the Shavasana posture, hands to the side, and then simply do a little breathing exercise, a little shamatha practice. So this can be a shamatha mindfulness practice, and at the same time relaxing the body, releasing tension, because often in the end of a work day, maybe we're still quite agitated and tense, and we find it a bit difficult to go to sleep. So then we can use this posture and this meditation to release that tension, to do a meditation, and then do that as long as you can sort of maintain a bit of focus. And when you start to get very drowsy and sleepy, then mentally note, okay, my meditation's finished now, and then move out of that posture into whatever posture you use for sleep. And so this can be a good way to do a meditation at the end of the day, because of course, doing two meditations a day as opposed to simply one in the morning, very good. But at the end of the day, many of us had a busy day, worked, we're quite fatigued and tired. So then instead of having to sit up to meditate, we can simply lie down. So you can either lie down and meditate for a certain time, or at the end of the day when you're going to bed, to do this as a transition to go to sleep. So both options are, of course, completely acceptable. And so that's what we're going to be doing in each of the evening sessions. As I mentioned before, we're going to be working on the compassion wing of the practice. So we're doing loving kindness and compassion and empathetic joy, equanimity style meditations. Then we're going to have a little bit of a discussion about the compassion, various aspects of the compassion practice. And then when we finish the evening session, we're going to finish each day with this corpse posture meditation here in the hall. So we're going to practice that to get sort of in the habit of doing that. Now, you may find that if you've not done this before, that, and this often happens in these retreats when I lead these retreats, first one or two nights, people get very relaxed, so much so that a little bit of snoring takes place. And often I find that by about the third night, it sort of stops, because people start to get used to meditating in that posture, because now when we lie down, it's just a signal to go to sleep. So even though we want to meditate, somehow, because body's horizontal, that's it, sleep time, boom, out we go. But if you persevere, then quite quickly often people find that they can stay quite alert in this posture. So anyway, we're going to be practicing that every evening of this retreat. So that's a little bit about the legs and the posture. The back is straight. So again, if you're finding that you're always straightening the back, that's often a sure sign we're not sitting on enough cushions and we're straining the back to keep it straight. So we're just going to get a lot of lower back pain. So then just add more cushions until you find your back is naturally straight. And then what to do with the hands? There are many options there. In the Tibetan tradition, usually the posture that's recommended for the hands is to have the right palm placed in the left, thumbs touching and then resting in the lap. And this is symbolizes the two wings of practice. The wisdom is the left side, the compassion is the right side, and then the thumbs touching is symbolizing that we practice wisdom and compassion together. So that's the one that's normally taught in the Tibetan tradition. If you find that uncomfortable, then, or maybe you're used to just like this, that's fine, having your hands resting on your legs. Sometimes people have learnt sort of this posture here, so that's all okay. I mean, anything that's sort of comfortable with the hands. One thing with that is to have a bit of ventilation here. So if you're sitting here like this, you may get a bit hot and stuffy in here. So if, particularly if you're using this posture, not to sort of sit there like this, but have the arms out, a little bit of ventilation going through there is always good. What to do with the head, of course. If the head is too low, then, of course, sleepiness. But also if it's too high, we might get sort of agitated. So generally, it's said that if we have the head in a position whereby if we happen to be looking straight out, we're actually sort of looking slightly downward, to have that head in that position. So with the eyes, of course, the general recommendation for meditation is to have them slightly open, because if we have them closed, that's usually a signal to go to sleep. We become very dull and drowsy and sleepy. And if we have them wide open, maybe too much light, too much stimulus, we get agitated. But this is something that you can play with a little bit as a beginner, because people who are very highly agitated, you may find as a beginner, even if you have them slightly open, too much light, agitation. You may need to have them lightly closed. But if you're the sort of person who gets very sleepy as soon as you close your eyes, not a good idea to meditate with your eyes closed. You're just going to get sleepy and dull. And so then probably you'll need to have the eyes slightly open for sure in your meditation. And particularly in this retreat, in this Mahamudra approach to practice, as we're going to see tomorrow, there's a lot of emphasis on focusing on the mind, both in the shamatha and the vipassana practice. And when we do those style of practice, it's very much recommended to have the eyes open. And there are a lot of good reasons for that. And I'll talk about those reasons in a couple of days' time when we get to that point in the practice. So certainly in this retreat, particularly after a couple of days when we really get into that style of practice, then we're going to really work with meditating with the eyes open. And you and there are a lot of reasons and benefits for doing that, but until that point, whatever you feel comfortable with, you can do in terms of the eyes. That's about it in terms of the posture. Oh, one other thing that often they mention is that sometimes, and of course the mouth was nice and relaxed, sometimes people find that they're producing a lot of saliva and swallowing constantly, which is disturbing them. So sometimes the recommendation, if you're doing that, is to touch the tip of your tongue on the upper palate lightly, and that can help to reduce the amount of saliva build up in the mouth. So sometimes you'll see that recommendation in terms of the posture. Any questions about posture that anyone would like to ask? Yeah, so that's sort of basically the using the similar position to the meditation stool without the stool. So with the meditation stool, it's slightly, your knees tend to be together because you're tucking under, but there, of course, the cushion's their side. So, I mean, of course, if you find that comfortable, that's fine, you know. Again, as long as, if you're used to that, but if you're not, you're probably going to find after some time, because you're stretching the knees a lot, you may get a lot of pain there. Yeah, so probably, and again, I think there, particularly in yoga, there are postures that can help to work with those sorts of muscles to make them stretch. So I think those sort of variations, we need to be a little bit careful in terms of the angle. So I think with those sorts of things, it's maybe good to talk to an experienced yoga teacher who knows what variations can actually harm knees and so forth.
Knees should be together.
No, I'm not sure in that. I would suspect if you have them together, it would probably put more strain on the insides. But I'm no yoga teacher, so I would. If you're doing that sort of variation, it may be good to speak to an experienced yoga teacher in terms of what's good for knees and so forth, and what's not. But that style of posture is okay, but then also maybe the ankles as well. There may be variations on what's good to do and what not too good to do. Because what you'll find is if we do any sort of posture which sort of pushes the body a bit too much, and we do that long term, we may actually end up with some chronic problems with the body. So anything like that, I get some advice about that. I'm not familiar with that posture, so again, maybe some experienced yoga teacher can then give you some variations of that on how to do it in a good way. Anything else about the posture? So again, with the posture, three things: back straight, body relaxed, and then keep the body as still as possible in the meditation. Because we want to be able to forget about the body and just focus on the meditation. So that's preparing the body. Speech here is talking about sort of internal chit-chat. And often the case is that, or sometimes at least, we come into meditation with a little bit of negative state of mind, a bit of negative chit-chat. Then it's very hard to set a good motivation and to get into the meditation, because we're sort of stuck in this negative chit-chat, negative state of mind. So then what's very helpful is preparing the speech is you start by doing a little breathing exercise. And in different traditions, they have variations of that. In the Tibetan tradition, often you hear about this 9-round breathing exercise. Particularly in the area of Tantra, it involves very elaborate visualizations and blocking nostrils and breathing in through one and out the other, together with complex visualizations of channels and subtle energies and so forth. Some traditions simply talk about taking 3 deep breaths. Some others talk about counting 21 breaths. But all those exercises at this point in the preparation all serve the same purpose, and that is to bring the mind into a neutral state. Because if we focus on the breathing through visualizing or counting or simply taking 3 deep breaths, we're occupying the mind on some physical part of the body. We can let go more easily of negative state of mind. So very good at the beginning, if we find that we're coming into the meditation in a little bit negative state of mind, do a little breathing exercise, whether it's this 9-round breathing exercise, simply counting 21 breaths, or simply taking 3 deep breaths, to get the mind in a little bit of a neutral state. So that's a very good thing to do. And then also here, then particularly if we've done that, but in general, is then allow the breathing to settle into its natural rhythm, and not to control the breath. Sometimes people feel in meditation that they need to have very rhythmic breathing, or maybe we need to make deep breathing or very subtle breathing. And so then they try to manipulate the breath and force the breath to go in a certain way. And then often what happens, you see people trying to do this, breathing more subtly, and then all of a sudden they go, because they're not getting enough air into the lungs. And of course, when you do that, then that disturbs the meditation. So basically here, just let the breath do whatever it wants. Now, unfortunately, the reality is, of course, many of us in the modern society have very poor breathing techniques, and we're not really nourishing the body as much as we should. So then outside of meditation, of course, there are many different breathing exercises and exercises we can do to improve the way which we naturally breathe. And there are, you know, there are many breathing manipulation exercises like pranayama and so forth that have various purposes like that. And that's fine, but in this sort of meditation, that's not really the time to do these sorts of practices. So in the normal meditations that we're going to be doing, then simply let the breathing do its own thing. Just let it do. The body knows how much you need to breathe. So we don't want to be trying to control or manipulate the breath in these meditations. It's just going to create another distraction and disturbance. And then in terms of preparing the mind, of course, setting a good positive motivation for the meditation, but also particularly here, we're going into the shamatha practice, but in general, of course, in meditation, is to be in the present moment. Often at the beginning of the meditation, we're not in the present moment. Often we're recalling something in the past, or we're already anticipating something coming up, often in the form of, oh, I wonder what's going to happen in this meditation. I hope I get such and such an experience. I hope I don't get such and such an experience. So we're already having these hopes and expectations or worries about what might or might not happen in the meditation. So this is not very conducive to the meditation practice. So therefore, as part of preparing the mind, is to simply let go of anything in the past and the future and simply bring the mind into the present moment. And then, having that good motivation, now we're ready to meditate, having prepared body, speech and mind. So it's important at the beginning of a meditation that we do this effectively. Now, you may find as a beginner, we need to spend more time doing this, and you may find in certain meditations you may need to spend more time doing this to prepare. In other meditations, you might be able to prepare body, speech and mind more quickly. But however long it takes, take that time. It's time well spent. Because if we rush through this or don't do this at all, and we jump into the meditation straight away, you're going to maybe have a lot of unnecessary difficulties with your posture and your mind and all sorts of things. So really take your time to go through the preparation, prepare well, prepare body, speech and mind as best you can, then we're in the best possible state to do the actual meditation. So of course, in our practices here, we're going to go through these steps to prepare ourselves well for the meditations. So that's, in general, preparation. Actual meditation, of course, again, in this retreat, we're going to be focusing on, well, four actually, but three main areas: the foundation practices, which we're going to look at after lunch each day, the session after lunch. In the morning sessions, we're going to be working on the shamatha practices. In the last two afternoon sessions, we're going to be working on the vipassana practices. And then in the evening session, the compassion wing of practice is going to be the topic for the meditations. So that's the daily structure. Since we're starting the shamatha practice tomorrow morning, first thing, and I don't really want to talk so much in the morning two sessions, I'd like to introduce now the shamatha practice. Now, probably many of you have already been introduced to it. Maybe some of you are not so familiar with it, but anyway, it's also a good review. So let's now have a bit of a look at the shamatha practice that we're going to be working with every morning for the first three sessions each day. So shamatha is a Sanskrit word, and it's a concentration practice. So the concentration practice is, again, developing our ability to focus. And this word shamatha in Sanskrit we can divide in two. The shama literally means a mind that is non-discursive, meaning not caught up in a lot of thinking, meaning a calm mind. And ta means to remain or abide. So usually translated as calm abiding, meaning the mind is calm, meaning not all this thinking going on, and it's abiding, meaning it's resting on a single object. So calm abiding is usually how shamatha is translated. And shamatha is a particular level of concentration we're trying to cultivate in the spiritual path. There are many levels of concentration that we can develop, but the minimum level that is required to go really fully into the vipassana practice, the wisdom practice, is this mind of shamatha, this level of concentration called shamatha. So in this practice, then, we are cultivating two qualities. And that is that we want to have a stable mind, meaning to be able to focus
on a given object without becoming distracted. So the first quality we're cultivating is stability, a stable mind. So, of course, the fault we're trying to overcome to develop this is distraction. But not only do we want a stable mind, not only do we want to be able to focus on an object without becoming distracted, but we want to be able to focus on that object in a very clear way. So that quality, of course, is clarity. And the fault that we need to overcome to develop clarity, of course, is dullness. So these are the two main imbalances or faults that we're trying to overcome in the shamatha practice, distraction and dullness. But here I like to add a third quality that's normally not mentioned in the meditation texts here. The meditation texts normally talk about these two qualities. But I think there's a third quality that, particularly for us and in our modern society, we really need to pay attention to. And that is that often we come into this practice and meditation in general with a lot of agitation and stress and tension. You know, many of us lead very hectic lives, fast-paced lives, bombarded by stimulus, a lot of agitation, and our minds tend to be quite chaotic. And then in our life, if we want to focus on anything or any activity, what we naturally do is we tense to be able to focus so that we don't get swept away. So our natural tendency is to have a lot of tension, particularly when we focus. We have tension in general, but then when we focus on something, we tense even more. And so we tend to bring this into meditation practice. And unfortunately, often the meditation texts here, one of the very first instructions, and we see this in our text here. In fact, I'll just quote it for you. You don't need to find it, but I'll just quote. It says, attentively focus mindfulness. It's on page 5 in the middle. Attentively focus mindfulness. Or sometimes the text will say, firmly focus on the object. And then we read that and we go, okay, I can do that. And then we clamp down on it. Because that's what we normally do. And then actually, when people do that, then they go, wow, I can sort of focus here a bit. It's not too bad. But then, of course, they keep doing this, and then their mind gets more and more tense, and they get more and more agitated, and then eventually they can become completely exhausted. So much so that sometimes people complain that they get headaches from meditating. So that's because it's got way too much tension. So there's no way we're going to develop stability or clarity with tension. If we only have to focus for a short time, then a bit of tension, okay, it doesn't matter. But here in meditation, we're wanting to focus longer and longer. And if you focus with tension, you will. You'll get very agitated and you'll get completely exhausted from meditating. So the very first thing we need to cultivate here is relaxation. So as a beginner, particularly in the shamatha practice, we need to emphasize relaxation, particularly if we're the sort of person that is quite tense, and particularly when we meditate, we're quite tense. Then the very first thing we need to do is simply relax the body, relax the mind. Relax, 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 relax. So if all we manage to do in this retreat, in our morning shamatha sessions, if all we do manage to do by the end of the retreat is relax a little bit, success. Success. Because often for many of us, we've forgotten how to do this in our life. We're so wound up Our body and minds are tight and tense. We have sleep problems because of that. We have a lot of agitation. Big mess. So if we can relax our body and mind, then we can develop some stability. And on the basis of a more stable mind, we can improve the clarity of our attention. So we really need to cultivate these qualities in this order. So I'm going to be, in the next couple of days particularly, I'm going to be emphasizing this relaxation a lot in our shamatha practice. So really work on the relaxation, really relax the body and mind as much as possible, and then you'll find the rest of the practice will go a lot better. As a beginner, often the main reason people have difficulties in meditation is because of this. Too tight, too tense, trying too hard. We simply need to relax, 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 and then things flow a lot better. So this is the qualities we're cultivating in this practice. Any questions on that so far? The other thing I want to briefly touch on this evening is then what object should we use for this practice? Because in this practice, we're focusing on a single object. And in the meditation texts, there are many possibilities that are given on what we can focus on. Probably the main object in many Buddhist traditions that's emphasized for this practice is breath, the physical sensations of the breath. And often the meditation texts say that if you're the sort of person who is highly discursive, meaning always thinking, 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 then definitely the best object for you is the breath. Because the breath is physical. And by focusing on it, it gets us out of our conceptual mind into the body. So this is a good start. And most of our conceptual thinking is about the past and the future. Very rarely are we in the present moment. And from a Buddhist perspective, living in the past and the future is a source of a lot of unnecessary unhappiness. And some modern studies are coming to the very same conclusion. The physical sensations of the breath, of course, only happen in the present moment. So by focusing on them, we get out of our conceptual mind into the body, we get out of the past and the future into the present moment. So very good. So for many of us, the breath will be the best object to use. And within the breath practice, there are at least three variations. There is what's called the full body breath practice. And with that one, we are simply noticing sensations anywhere in the body associated with the breathing. So this can be in the area of the abdomen, stomach, chest, throat, nostril, anywhere in this area, any sensations associated with the breathing. So this is a very diffuse object, and this is particularly helpful for cultivating relaxation. And this is what we are going to be doing each evening, at the end of every evening session. We're going to be doing this very practice using the corpse posture, lying flat on our back, noticing sensations anywhere in the body associated with the breathing, really emphasizing relaxation. So that is going to be our last practice at the end of every day. A second variation that's emphasized by a number of Buddhist traditions, particularly a number of the Theravada traditions, focusing on the area of the abdomen, the rising and lowering of the abdomen as we breathe. Again, a fairly large area of focus. So therefore, this is quite useful for helping to stabilize the mind, developing stability of attention. And the third variation, is to focus at the entrance of the nostrils. Very tiny area of focus, And with this practice, you can actually focus on this tiny area at the entrance of the nostrils or at the actual entrance of the nostrils, whichever is easier for you. So anywhere in this tiny area here is to focus on the sensation. Because it's a much smaller object of focus, this is very helpful for improving the clarity of our attention. So, in this retreat, though, where we are following the Mahamudra practice, and as I briefly mentioned already, the Mahamudra practice has a lot of emphasis on focusing on the mind in both the shamatha and the vipassana practice. So another object that is often recommended here is the mind itself. And so we're going to be in this retreat doing a lot of work with this in the shamatha practice. And of course this involves simply focusing on our own mind and whatever's coming up in our mind. Thoughts, emotions, memories. Simply observing whatever's going on in our mind. Observing them arise and pass. Now, many people find this very challenging for two reasons. One is that the mind is not some physical, tangible thing like the sensations of the breath. So it's a more subtle object. So people find it even difficult to where to focus. And the other second difficulty that often people find with this practice is we have such a strong habit of always following our thoughts, emotions, and memories. As soon as something pops in our mind, we grab it, off we go. So to then just say, sit back and watch, people find it almost impossible because we're constantly just swept away, swept away, swept away. So many people find it more challenging. But this is going to be the main focus of this retreat. To help us to get into the practice, what we're going to do for the first 2 days, so tomorrow morning and the next morning, we're going to use the breath to hopefully develop some relaxation, some stability and some clarity so that we're in a better basis then to start to look at the mind. So that's what we're going to do in this retreat. Spend 2 days working in the mornings, working with the breath to prepare ourselves so that we can get into this practice a little bit more easily. And then we're going to work with this and the third object, which I'll mention shortly, for the rest of the retreat in the morning sessions. Now, this, even though it is challenging, and this is the main focus of the Mahamudra practice in the shamatha and vipassana, huge benefits. Because again, in our modern society, we often tend to be the slaves of our mind. We are often tormented by our own mind, and we're often overwhelmed by our thoughts, emotions, and memories. In this practice, the shamatha practice of observing the mind, we will, instead of being the slaves of our mind, we're going to become the masters of our mind. We're going to develop the ability to be the observer or witness of our mind, simply observing thoughts, emotions, and memories as they arise and pass, arise and pass. And then, of course, the more we do that, the less we are feeding them. Because every time we follow a thought, emotion, or memory, and of course, if they're unpleasant, we don't know what to do with them, what we do is we try to suppress them. And of course, suppressing them is also feeding them. And it also suppressing just causes a lot of physical problems in the body as well. If we can simply observe them arise and pass, we're not feeding them, which means the habit of them coming back will get weaker and weaker and weaker. Our mind will naturally become more quiet and still. Now, and often people who don't know about Buddhism or meditation, they often think that meditation is about making your mind still. Let's make our mind still. Have you ever tried to make your mind still? Does it work? No. It just makes it worse. Because making the mind still is just trying to suppress these things. And by suppressing them, you're just making them more. So it's just going to, it's like throwing petrol on the fire. It's a disaster. So all we need to do is not fight with our mind to make it still. We just step back And we watch. That's all we need to do. We don't need to do anything. Just watch. And then we're not feeding. So then slowly, slowly, like watching a fire, it will just, we're not putting any more fuel on the fire. The fire will slowly die down. Our mind will slowly, over time, settle down. And then, because now we're developing the habit of observing, then if some strong mental event were to arise, some very heavy thought, emotion, memory were to come up, then we could simply be present with it without it overwhelming us. Because if you look at what a thought, emotion, or memory is, it's virtually nothing. It has no power in itself. It only has power if we give it power. And we give it power by either identifying with it and following it or trying to suppress it. Then we give it lots of power and it can really harm us. If we can simply be present and observe it arise and pass, it can't do anything to harm us. So by doing this practice, we will become the masters of our mind. And it is the main focus within the Mahamudra approach to practice. So we're going to spend quite a lot of time working with this in the morning sessions. And again, as a basis for that, we're going to spend the first 2 days working with the breath to really try to prepare ourselves well to begin this practice. And then we're also going to go into a related practice that also comes within Mahamudra, and that is it's often called shamatha with no object, or sometimes it's called awareness of awareness. Very closely related to this practice, but the essential difference is that in this practice, experientially we have the sense of being the observer or witness. We're observing our mind and the thoughts, emotions, and memories that are arising and passing. Whereas in this practice, we are not really focusing on what's appearing in the mind, we are simply being aware that we're aware. And that's a much more non-dualistic practice. Experientially, there's not this explicit sense of being some separate observer or witness observing the mind. It's more about resting in the mind itself, simply noticing or being aware that we're aware. Because now, let's say we're observing this pen. Explicitly, we're aware of the pen. Implicitly, we're aware of being aware of the pen. Implicitly. So all we're doing in this practice is we're focused on the awareness, being aware that we're aware. So, and we're going to explain these practices, of course, in more detail in the coming days when we get to them. So in this practice, we're simply resting in awareness itself. Many people find this even more challenging than observing the mind. And the reason that often people find it more challenging is because it's too simple. Because it basically involves doing nothing. Doing nothing. Because often when this is explained, people ask, what am I supposed to do? Tell me what I'm supposed to do in this practice. And that's the problem. This practice is not about doing, it's about being. It's about being present. Simply being aware of being aware. So it really means doing nothing. We're not used to doing nothing. We always want to do something. So often people find this very challenging because what am I supposed to be doing? Tell me what I'm doing. And it's about not doing. So anyway, we're going to explain that in more detail when we get to that. So these two are very closely related, and so these two are going to be the focus of this retreat in terms of the shamatha practice. Also, of course, here, in other systems of practice, they mention other sorts of objects as well. Any of you who've studied a little bit the Lam Rim approach to practice in the Galuk, when we talk about shamatha practice, here as an object, they most often emphasize Have a mental image of a Buddha. Visualize a Buddha in front of you and use that as the object. Now, many people find that almost impossible because we're not familiar what a Buddha look like. And it's very complex visualization, and many of us have extreme difficulty to visualize. So many people even can't even begin that practice. Now, of course, the reason that it's presented is it has huge advantage if we use a mental image of a Buddha in the shamatha practice, because later when we get into Vajrayana or Tantra, that involves all sorts of visualizations. And so if we're already familiar with focusing on a mental image of a Buddha, we've got huge preparation going into Tantra Vajrayana. But to do that at a beginning phase, many people find very challenging. But here in the Mahamudra, again, we're going to focus on these two mainly. But the first, tomorrow, the next day, we're going to use the breath as a sort of starting point. Any questions about any of this? Because that's all I wanted to mention about the shamatha practice this evening. Skip it.
Yes,
just is
it possible just to jump?
Yeah. So
like all I do with Greek meditation, I can like torturing myself, really.
Torturing yourself.
And I can't feel like because
what do you mean by torturing yourself?
Like I'm pushing, it is difficult, it's boring, it's
exactly. So this is what we're going... One of the things... I was hoping you said that, because that's the main reason people find it difficult. It's boring. And therein lies the problem, is that... And this is one of the things we're going to focus in the foundation practices. You know, because, oh, give me something exciting. Like, give me a good, exciting practice. Something interesting.
No, but I remember the second and the thought, yeah. Easier because you can kind of you use that channel which is chatting, yeah, you use your mind, and when you walk with breathing, you just don't know where to place your mind, like,
right, so
yeah,
okay,
talking.
So in general, in shamatha, the recommendation is use the object that works best for you. That's a general recommendation. But of course, here we need to be very careful in that, yes, this can be more interesting, but often then people fool themselves and think that they're actually observing the mind. All they're doing is they're just following a nice story in their mind. And they think, oh, I'm doing shamatha practice because I'm observing the mind. And all they're doing is just following some nice story, some interesting story. And then, of course, we are simply increasing this by following our story. So, yes, it's more interesting, but it's also more easy to fool ourselves and think, oh, well, I'm observing the mind because I'm watching this story unfold. So we need to be very careful with this point. And some people find this or this practice actually easier to do than the breath. That's possible. But when we look at the breath practice and we sort of say, oh, you know, maybe some people say it's too difficult to do, but then other people say, oh, that's boring, then that's usually a sure sign that our foundation practices have crumbled, meaning we're substituting meditation for some stimulus pleasure, so that we're still caught up in wanting some sort of pleasurable experience. But instead of looking out there for the pleasurable experience, we've turned our attention to meditation. I want to get stimulated by my meditation practice. And then we're stuck. So we need to be very careful about this. So if we find that, oh, I don't want to do that because it's boring, then we need to check what is our motivation for doing meditation in general. Are we doing meditation for the correct reason? Or are we simply using meditation as another way of having some sort of pleasant stimulus? So that's, we need to be a bit careful with that. And it's an easy trap to go and fall into. And in fact, now I'm going to wrap up because I want to do a meditation. I want to talk a little bit about this point for a few minutes.
And that is just some general advice about this retreat we're now starting. And that is, the first thing is, based talking about quality of relaxation, is really just have a relaxed approach for this retreat. Now, of course, when we come into a retreat such as this, we need to put some effort into the retreat. But then often people sort of, as we normally often do in our daily life, we get quite uptight and tense about that. Oh, I've got to take advantage of this opportunity. I've got a maximum effort. I've got to get somewhere this week. And then, of course, they bring this tension into it, and then it's a disaster because they're so uptight and tense, and then they just get frustrated because nothing's happening, and then the whole week is a mess. So just let go of that. I mean, really just have a completely relaxed approach. Enjoy the week. Don't get uptight and tense and frustrated. And one way to help with that is to drop all expectations of hoping to have some sort of experience, worrying about what's not going to happen. If you notice any of these sorts of things coming into your mind, then just drop it, drop it, drop it. Because if we come into this with some sort of hope and fear or expectation, we're just creating a lot of unnecessary obstacles for ourselves. So simply, if you notice any time during this week, some sort of expectation coming in, oh, I think my meditation should be at least as good as yesterday. I hope it's better, in fact. I hope I'm more concentrated today than yesterday. We're just going to have a lot of frustration. Because often people feel like meditation practice should sort of go like this. I don't know anyone whose meditation practice goes like this. In the short term, it's more like this. So if you're hoping that, you know, the next day will be at least as good as today, and, you know, I've practiced pretty good today, I think tomorrow it should be the same or a little bit better, we're setting ourselves up for a lot of frustration. So if you notice those ideas coming in, just let them go, let them go, let them go. And I like here also to use the same word as often Alan Wallace uses with these retreats. He often likes to call them, instead of retreat, call them expeditions. They're like an expedition into uncharted territory. So it's very helpful in these expeditions or retreats or whatever word you want to use, to have this type of mind, this curious mind, you know, oh, I wonder what I'm going to uncover this week, you know, rather than, oh, I hope it's going to be better today than yesterday, tomorrow's going to be better than today. So if we go into this with this sort of attitude, I think then we're going to get the most out of this week. We're going to avoid frustration and tension and agitation. And also, one other point, and then I'll finish, is that even in such a short retreat as this, often if people go into the practice with a good attitude and do the best they can, then often things start to happen in the meditation, both physically and mentally. And all sorts of things can happen physically and mentally. You can have all sorts of pleasant physical sensations in the body. You can have all these pleasant, blissful states of mind. You can have unpleasant things happening in the body, unpleasant things happening in the mind, and you can have completely strange things happening in the body and the mind. And this is a normal side effect of meditation. And unfortunately, what happens is when these sorts of experiences come up, people react as we normally do. Pleasant? Oh, I want that. Give me more of that. Unpleasant? Oh, go away. Strange? Oh, I don't want that. And so then we end up with craving for pleasant things. And I fell into this trap when I first meditated. When I first did my first meditation retreat, one of these Goenka Vipassana retreats, scanning the body, then very shortly after starting that, I had this blissful flow of sensations throughout the body. So blissful. First time I meditated, I didn't expect it. So it came. Wow, this is so nice. Wow, meditation, this is what it's about. And so when I had this blissful experience, I thought, oh, I like that. I want to keep that one. Let's reproduce that. So I spent the next 4 days trying to reproduce it. Each day I got more and more frustrated. And then by day 8, I just said, okay, I give up. I don't care what happens. They came back. And then, of course, I want that. Let's recreate it. and then frustration. So it was, for me, I was very lucky to have that, because I saw that craving these pleasant things just creates frustration. And we're just getting sidetracked. The goal of meditation here is not somehow to have blissful sensations. The goal is to develop single-pointed concentration. So what I'd like to recommend is, in this retreat, if you have any sort of pleasant, unpleasant, or strange physical or mental experiences, don't get caught up in them. Don't get caught up with craving the pleasant things, having aversion to the unpleasant or the strange things. Let them go, let them go, let them go. Because they'll come and they'll go. They'll come and they'll go. Otherwise, we're just going to get sidetracked and we're not going to move forward in our practice. So just let them go, let them go. If there is a particular physical or mental experience that you're having every single session, then maybe you can come and see me and I can give some advice, because maybe you're sitting with the posture in a strange way that's causing some sort of unpleasant sensations in the same part of the body all the time, you know, things like this. But generally you'll find these sort of pleasant, unpleasant, strange physical, mental experiences, they come, they'll go. Because one of the things that happens, particularly at the physical level, as we relax the body and we have a good posture and the subtle energies start to balance, that causes all sorts of physical sensations in the body. Things like floating body, no body experience, heavy body, big body, small body, electrical flow in the body, tingling vibration, all sorts of things are possible and probably might happen. So again, just let it go, and just stick to the practice. Okay? So that's a little bit of advice. Any last questions then before we do the corpse posture meditation? So this was just a brief introduction, and during the course of the retreat, of course, we'll talk more about the shamatha practice as we go along, and the vipassana practice as well, of course, and the foundation and compassion. So this is just a brief introduction for now. Okay. Then what we're going to do at the end of every evening, and we'll keep it quite short, 15 minutes, we'll do the corpse posture meditation. So then, don't start yet, just a couple of points with that, is then to find yourself a nice space, probably good to use your cushion, because if you're lying with particularly your core of your body on the floor, it might be a little bit cold. And then also you can, if you want, is often you may use your cushion to put under your head, to cushion your head. Lying on your back, if you find it a little bit cool, then you may like to use your shawl to put over your body. Or if you find it a bit hot, then you can put your shawl down and lie on it, whatever you like. Again, with the feet a little bit apart, the hands to the side, palms facing upward. And what we're going to do for this meditation is we're going to switch the lights off, because if you're lying down and you're underneath the light, it's quite intense. So we're going to switch the lights off. So therefore, if you're the sort of person who, you know, as soon as you lie down, that's it, you're going to pass out and sleep, probably good in this one to keep your eyes at least partially open or even normally open, because it'll be quite dark. So then keep your eyes open if you're the sort of person that really gets drowsy very quick. And we're going to do a 15-minute meditation, and we're going to really just work on the relaxation. So just really have a relaxed body, relax the mind, and then just in a very relaxed way, focusing on the sensations of the breath anywhere where you most easily notice sensations within the body. Okay, so that's going to be the practice each evening. Anyone have any questions about that? Not clear. Okay, then find yourself... Oh, one more thing, sorry. When we finish this, so I'm going to have a little bell going off, at the end of this meditation, then lying down like this is not good to sort of jump up, but rather to first bend your left knee up and then roll over. I'll give instructions as we go, but then to roll over on your right side and then use your hands to sit in an upright position. And once we've finished that, then each evening I won't be saying anything more. We'll just finish. So if you want to continue this, when the bell rings, just stay in the corpse posture. So you can stay here for another 15 minutes, half an hour, as long as you want. You don't have to get up when the bell goes at the end, because I'm not going to say anything more. In fact, maybe tonight I'll say a few words, but generally when we finish that, I'm just going to be walking out the room silently. So then if you want to get up and walk out, you can do that silently, and the rest of you can, if you want, you can stay and keep meditating in that posture for as long as you want, and then you're free to go as you please. And some of you might like to then actually sit upright and do your own little practice in here in the evening. That's fine as well. Okay, so just to be aware of that. Okay, so let's do the practice. So again, we'll do 15 minutes or so. So remember again, the feet slightly apart and the hands a little bit away from the body. So simply allow your awareness to descend into your body. In particular, becoming aware of sensations where your body is touching the cushion or the floor. And then allow your awareness to rise up and fill the entire space of your body. And simply become aware of sensations throughout the body. And if you notice any area of tightness or tension in any part of the body, then use the out-breath to relax and release that tightness or tension as best you can. And then bring your awareness to the area of your face and soften and relax all the muscles in the face. The mouth and jaw, soft and relaxed. And all the muscles around the eyes, soft and relaxed. In this way, allowing the entire body to become completely relaxed, completely at ease. relaxing more deeply with each out-breath. Allowing the breathing to flow naturally and effortlessly. Not trying to control or regulate the breath in any way. And if you're finding yourself already getting very drowsy or sleepy, then it would be a good idea to keep the eyes open. And then without dwelling in the past, without anticipating the future, letting go of all thoughts of the past or future, simply allow the mind to come to rest in the present moment. And simply focus on the sensations of the breath throughout the body. Wherever you can most easily notice any sensations associated with the breathing. Maintain an ongoing flow of mindfulness of the sensations of the breath throughout the body. If you find yourself getting caught up in some distractions, then relax. Release the distraction and very gently return to focusing on the breath. If you find that you're getting very drowsy or sleepy, then again, it's a good idea to keep the eyes open. But then also use the in-breath as an opportunity to arouse and refresh your focus on the breath. Focusing on the in-breath, relaxing on the out-breath. slowly finish this meditation. Again, we can slowly bend the left knee, and in your own time, roll over onto your right side. And just stay there for a short time. And then use both your hands to gently push yourself up into a seated posture. Was that too dark? I mean, normally I've done here this in the past in the summertime, so there's still some light outside. It's okay like that, or would you prefer to have a little bit of light somewhere? It's okay? Okay. I mean, personally I like to do this because, not just the lying down, but to be in complete darkness, because particularly when we get into this Maha Mudra practice, the recommendation very much is to have the eyes open. And then, of course, if we're not used to that and there's a lot of stimulus and movement, we easily get distracted and our visual attention goes everywhere. But, of course, if it's completely dark like this, you can have your eyes open and then there's nothing to grab your attention. So, actually, it's a good way to get into the mode of meditating with your eyes open. If you have it completely dark, and then it's not so easy to get pulled away by visual stimulus. But anyway, I've got more to say about that, the eyes open, a little bit later in the retreat. So that's all I wanted to mention today. So just one or two points, and then we'll finish this evening. So again, the silence starts when you go to bed tonight. So if you still have some logistic issues to sort out, particularly again, as Tet mentioned, if you have any money to give to him, now would be a good time to do that. If you still want to have a little chat with some of the other retreatants this evening, that's fine. But be aware that if you're doing that over in the other building there's other people who may already have gone to bed. So to be very quiet about that. And, of course, we have an early start tomorrow, so maybe not chat till the early hours of the morning so we can get enough sleep. Because if we don't get enough sleep, of course, then it's very difficult to meditate well. So don't stay up too late tonight. And then when you go to bed, the silence starts and we continue the silence through till next Friday evening. And as I briefly mentioned then, tomorrow morning there's the wake-up call at 5:45, so is someone organised with the bell for that? Okay. But maybe also if you're a heavy sleeper, then maybe it's good to set an alarm because the little bell might not be enough to wake you up. They're not going to be ringing it next to your ear in your room. So if you're a heavy sleeper, maybe it's good to set an alarm as well. And then 6:15, so if you need to get started with a cup of tea or something, then you can come here and have a hot drink, or I don't know if there's tea and that available in the other houses there, in the other kitchen. So yeah, maybe it's better than... Sorry?
There's hot water and tea and...
In the other building?
In the building.
In the other one? In the,
yes. Is there? There should be something.
Yeah, so then you can have a cup of tea or something over there as well. And then 6:15, here with Tet, you'll be doing the 8 form moving meditation to get the body a little bit stretched and mobile, and then a little short 5-10 minute break, and then 6:45, we'll start the shamatha practice here. So again, we'll do these 2 20 minute sessions with a little 2 minute break till 7:30, and we'll have breakfast and then continue on from there. So that's all I wanted to say. So again, just to re-emphasize in this retreat, just to relax, enjoy, take it easy, don't get too uptight, and just drop any sorts of expectations and then things will go a lot better. If we have no expectations, then everything is okay. Any last questions before we call it a day? Okay. let's leave it there. So I'm very happy to be here, and I hope you enjoy the coming week. And see you tomorrow morning. Good night.